It's Marketplace Tech for Tuesday, December 20th. I'm Molly Wood, filling in for Ben Johnson. One of the big tech and business trends of 2016 was fintech, the disruption of banks and financial services by companies that either introduce new tech or do everything online, like SoFi, which is short for social finance. It's a personal finance company that got its start refinancing student loans, and it's moved into life insurance, personal loans, mortgages, and your personal life. SoFi CEO Mike Cagney joins me now on the line from San Francisco. Mike, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am well. So describe for me, if you will, some of the ways that SoFi is different from traditional banks for people who aren't that familiar.
What's very unique about the business is our focus on a core demographic, kind of the 25 to 45-year-old customer base that is often called a HENRY. It's an acronym for High Earner Not Rich Yet. It's a customer segment that the banking industry has really struggled to deliver a value to, and primarily because there's a lot of misperception around millennial customers, the idea that they're fickle, they're not loyal, they're price sensitive. We found that really not to be the case. We found them to be extremely engaged, extremely loyal, great members.
What are some of the other differences between you and traditional banks? For example, how are your loans funded?
So ironically, banks are a big buyer of our loan portfolio. And I think in terms of the financing of the business, it's not too different from traditional financial services companies, other than some of the efficiencies that we built in. But what's most important is we have this concept of membership and community. So when you become a SoFi member, there really is a membership there. We help you with your career. You lose your job, we help you get reemployed. We've done that over 200 times for our members. We hold networking events 2 to 3 times a week across the U.S. that are always oversubscribed. And more recently, we've hosted dating events for our members. And I can't remember the last time Wells Fargo had a dating event, but it was probably never. So,
what is the goal of that? Is it like to create sort of good feelings among your debtors so that, you know, once your two lenders get married, then they come back to you for a mortgage?
There's a couple of factors to it. Obviously, we like to create household units and sell mortgages. That's always a plus in terms of the dating events. But at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is really help improve our members' lives. And the better off they are, the better off they're doing in their career, with their family, with their relationships, the better our relationship is with them.
You're also known for offering lower interest rates than other lenders. Is that still the case, and is that sustainable?
So we have very competitive rates. One of the things that we do is obviously because of some of the efficiencies that we have, we can pass that on to our members in terms of competitive interest rates across all our products. But obviously with the rates rising, everyone's rates are rising, and ours will move with the market, but they'll always be competitive.
How do you see the space overall evolving? I mean, how do you keep a lead if Wells Fargo suddenly figures out that better customer service is a good idea? I mean, we've seen no sign of that so far, but it could happen, right? And would that be a problem for you?
I think we will drag the financial industry into the space that we're occupying today. I think the idea of delineating, differentiating around brand and service and really understanding what this millennial customer needs is a huge milestone for us to achieve. But the financial industry will follow behind that. I think that the key for us is there's things that we do that a bank isn't structurally allowed to do. So, for example, as crazy as it sounds, Wells Fargo can't have a dating event. They can't help you get a job. Those aren't things that a bank holding company is allowed to do. And so we've been able to, as a non-bank, build certain aspects of differentiation that we think will continue to persist and really set us apart from traditional financial services players.
SoFi CEO Mike Cagney, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Now, if you're wondering why exactly SoFi can have singles parties but Wells Fargo can't, listen to my entire interview with Mike Cagney over at marketplace.org.
Marketplace is a nonprofit, listener-supported service. Think of it like crowdfunding old school. To keep our coverage strong and relevant, please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift in any amount counts twice, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. You can donate at marketplace.org by December 31st.
There is an unexpected name jumping into the world of self-driving cars this week. BlackBerry. Yeah, no, for real. The company just announced an autonomous vehicle research center in Ottawa, Canada, where it intends to make software that companies can license to build self-driving cars. The only wrinkle is that some other big names are trying to do the same thing, including, well, Apple. But BlackBerry thinks it has the winning strategy. Marketplace's Adam Ellington reports.
This time, the plucky Canadian company's lifeline comes in the form of a subsidiary called QNX, which makes human-machine interfaces. Richard Wallace is with the Center for Automotive Research. He says QNX already makes the software behind the infotainment systems for many top automakers.
For several years now, it's probably been one of the shining lights in a company that otherwise struggling to keep its head above water.
BlackBerry's years of experience designing mobile data systems make them a natural fit to bridge into driverless technology. So says Sebastian Fischmeister, an engineering professor from the University of Waterloo in Canada.
You don't build a safety-critical system just overnight.
Safety-critical systems are ones where a malfunction could result in death. Say, a faulty line of code, for instance.
Then the car will just drive over a person because that's simply what the program does.
As far as the BlackBerry phones are concerned, the company sold the rights to a low-cost Chinese carrier. I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
And speaking of self-driving cars and safety-critical systems, I have been thinking that it may be time for a tech intervention. Obviously, the race to put self-driving cars on the roads is on. Uber and Tesla and Google are pushing traditional automakers to catch up to them. And Uber in particular is pushing the boundaries of state regulations in California and in Nevada with its self-driving trucks. So like most road races, things are moving too fast and somebody is likely to get hurt. Don't get me wrong, I'm a believer in this tech and its potential for safer roads, environmental benefits, and greater mobility for people who really need it. But throwing autonomous cars onto crowded roads before they're ready is going to get somebody killed. And Uber's self-driving cars have reportedly already run two red lights in San Francisco. Yeah, I know regular cars get people killed all the time. But when a robot car does it, it'll set the technology back years. And then everybody will lose the race. Marketplace Tech was produced today from the Reveal Studios at the Center for Investigative Reporting. I'm Molly Wood. This is 8 p.m.